Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for April 27th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Buddy man, I love sitting down every week and talking to you about baseball. It's so much fun. I can't even believe it. How's it going?
What'd you say? my hearing is shot.
I just said I love sitting down each week and talking baseball with you, man.
Oh, baseball, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing. I had some umpire screaming in my ear today.
Cool. Was he screaming safe or out?
He was screaming, man, you could have been on like Aoyama Dory and known whether it was a called strike or not. Well, not, but if it was silence, oh, then the guy must have walked or something.
Well, that's good. You take the mystery out of it. At least you know where he stands.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Yeah, you knew where he would stand, which was like about a half a mile too close.
You should have gone out of the press box and gone up to him and said, "Do you mind if I take that thorn out of your paw?"
Yeah, I'd have been the first reporter to be thrown out of a game.
All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to talk about some notes, and we've got a few great listener questions this time, so let's start swinging. Clearing the bases! All right, so on Wednesday, I went out to Yokohama Stadium, and I was able to sit down with Matt Merton. And just sitting there talking with him and looking at him, and I'm just thinking, man, it's so much fun to go out to the park and talk to these guys. And we were laughing and joking just before we started taping, and he says, look, I love speaking English
to other people. So now we know why he's so generous with his time. He's recharging his batteries.
There you go, recharging. So now we know Matt, he's been on the show numerous times over our 4+ years. And you'll hear him say that this is his 6th season in Japan. And, you know, he's been through a lot here. He's had a lot of experiences there. I think when he eventually leaves Japan, he'll look back on this as a rich and very fulfilling experience for him. He's got Ichiro's single season hit record that he broke. That was his first year, and he still holds that record. But then again, he had that 2-out throw the ball into the stands incident once upon a time.
Yep.
But then he went on this long hitting streak of almost 30 games or right around 30 games. And then he ran a couple guys over at the plate.
And he told the world that he hated the ace pitcher.
He said, I hate Nomi, which was, he was speaking facetiously. But I guess the reporters who could understand that took it and ran with it. So then he had this career day last year, hitting a pair of home runs and driving in 7 at Jingu. And they went all the way to the Japan Series. I mean, he's really had a lot of experiences here. It's been good and bad and very enriching, I think. I think he'd tell you the same thing.
It's a little fulfilling. Of course, I think if we're mad, he would hope it was chick-filling or something.
Oh, boo. That's not going to get a high heat.
Well, you ask him. I think that's his... That's his favorite place to eat. We don't have those in the Bay Area, so I don't even know how you pronounce it.
It's Chick-fil-A.
Is that what it is?
Chick-fil-A.
Okay.
All right. So now that we've had that pronunciation, now that we've gotten the pronunciation practice out of the way, let's go ahead and listen to the conversation.
All right. On the show with us this week is Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers. Thanks again for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, buddy. So we talked to Tommy before the season started, and he talked about the fact that the CL is much improved. You guys have seen everybody. So what's your assessment of the Central League so far?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Obviously, from the time that I arrived here in 2010 to now, which is the 6th season, you've seen every team seemingly has gotten better. The Carp, obviously, from that time period to now are very strong. The Swallows, I think, are coming back. You know, they've had some injuries to their pitching staff over the last few years, and you know,
I think they've had pitching injuries to the people in the crowd watching the game.
Yeah, it's been a tough go for them injury-wise, you know. And then Yokohama, they had the new ownership or whatnot that took over a few years ago, I believe, and they've really made some strides in getting people out to the ballpark and putting some money into the team, and they've been a lot better. The Dragons look like they're back to pitching the way they did back in 2010-11. And they've been doing a lot better job and much more competitive. So really, you look, obviously the Giants are the Giants, and you look across the entire league. It's very competitive from top to bottom.
Now, I mean, there are a lot of razor close games this year, a lot of one run games involving all the teams. How much is the mental stress in executing all the little details? How much does that weigh on you during the game?
Well, I think that what it does is obviously, like you said, it puts emphasis on every pitch, on every play, which the game is naturally that way already. But when you're talking about one run games, it comes down to those little things. So on any given night, you can't really worry yourself about whether or not you're going to be the one to make that mistake or not come through in that circumstance. You go out, you play the game, and you try to work on the fundamentals and play the game as fundamentally sound as possible, and then let the chips fall where they may.
So you're saying you don't stress out at all in those close games?
You can't. In fact, I think that a lot of times when, as a player, when you're a competitor, when you get into the tight circumstances, I think it makes you better. I think it really allows you to hone in on what it is you're focusing on, and a lot of times it depends. You know, everybody's going to feel nervousness. Everybody's going to feel elements of pressure. Pressure is what you make of it. I think that when you can take those energies and make them a positive energy and use them to your advantage, it's a big benefit. If you allow those energies to be a negative energy for you, it's going to really hurt you. So I think it just depends on how you handle it.
Nick, my sentiment's exactly, when I played sports, I always just wanted to win. So I was just worried about doing whatever it took to win. Yeah. I wasn't worried about how close the game was.
Right, exactly. And then if you focus on the task at hand and keep it simple in that respect, I think it helps eliminate all of the things going on around you. And the guys that can live in that moment, they tend to do better.
All right, now the Swallows are pitching really well, and everything. We've talked about them on the show. There's been a lot of talk about them. You guys faced them already. They've been lights out. Their team ERA is, as we're speaking, 1.73, which is just, I'm just sitting here looking at the number, and it's crazy. What did you see when you faced them?
1.73, especially in that stadium. That to me may be possibly the most offensive stadium in our league. For them to have a 1.73 in that ballpark is pretty remarkable. I think, if anything, what you've seen for them is they've limited the damage. I mean, one of the ways for that staff to be successful is keeping the ball out of the air, making sure that the ball doesn't get elevated, because in that ballpark, you get the ball elevated, there's a chance it's going to be a home run. So obviously, you know, they're finding ways to keep the ball on the ground, to get weak contact, to get contact off the barrel. And they're, you know, to do that, you have to locate, you have to keep the ball off the middle of the plate. And they've done a great job of it this far.
That's what we said. If they allow their guys to try to catch the ball, now they didn't play great defense all the time, but they're allowing their guys a chance to catch the ball, they have a chance to make plays.
Exactly. And it's hard to catch them when they're in the seats. So, you know, you keep the ball off the barrel, you keep the ball in on their hands or off the end of the bat, and seemingly you'll have a much better chance.
All right. Now, obviously, this isn't the greatest start for you personally.
Right.
How do you get through it?
I mean, I think like anything else, you just take it one day at a time. I mean, whether you're doing really well or you're not doing well, any season you go through, there's always going to be time periods where you don't succeed. It doesn't matter what year it is. Last year I had a time, I think, from mid-May possibly to mid-June. I haven't really looked at it, where I struggled. I didn't really hit very well.
Mm-hmm.
You look at almost every season, there's going to be times where you're going to be down, whether it's the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, the end of the year. It just so happens to be now. So what you have to do is you have to continue to focus on what you're trying to accomplish, control what you can control, and look at the big picture, because at the end of the day, you go out there and you compete every single day, give it your best, and you can't always control where the ball goes. You can't control how they pitch you or what's going on in other areas of the game. You just go out there and do the best you can and see what happens.
Now, who do you work with in terms of hitting? You work with Tom a lot, or you work with WADA? I noticed that, I think I saw a report that you had worked with WADA one time so far this year. Who do you work with?
Yeah, I mean, Tio and I and Mauro are together on a daily basis. Obviously, Sekikawa-san and Takahashi-san are also involved with that process. But, you know, Tio's over here. He gives us a chance to talk every day and work on it. And I would say, for the most part, you know, all the hitting coaches are involved, but Tio's the main guy. And again, that's because of my lack of Japanese and nothing else. So if I spoke the language a little better, it might be a little different.
Well, not for lack of trying. I've seen a lot of your hero interviews.
I try.
Gambarimasu. Now, what's your reaction to being dropped in the lineup? I don't want to poison your answer, but how do you feel about it when it happens?
No, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You can't control what the manager does. It's his club. You know, he's going to decide what he wants to do. My job doesn't change regardless. I go out there, I take my bats, I see the ball, I try to hit it based on the circumstance. And, you know, it's up to him to decide what he wants done with the lineup. You know, the biggest thing is you put a lineup out there that's as efficient as possible, and you look for that. Well, however you can create efficiency within your offense, the name of the game is scoring runs. So, you know, I think that anytime a manager writes a lineup, that's what they have in mind. And if he thinks the most efficient way to score runs right now is to move moved me in the lineup, and that's his decision. I just go out there and I hit.
Okay. You know, we talked to Matt Franco a long time ago. He said it doesn't matter what place you hit in the lineup, the job doesn't change.
No, it's true. I mean, your job is still to see the ball and hit the ball. You know, I think based on where you hit in the lineup, different circumstances will arise more often. I think it'll present certain opportunities more often, one way or the other. But other than the opportunities that you're going to be presented, or, you know, maybe the style of the pitching in certain places within the order, other than that, your job is still the same. You see the ball, you hit the ball.
Right.
You know, it doesn't change in that respect.
Gotcha. All right, now, interleague, the schedule's changed this year. They went to a format where you play 3 games in a row, and then there aren't so many off days. So what's your thoughts about the way they changed the schedule?
I like it. I mean, I like it a lot. I think the 3-game series is better than the 2-game series. I think it's more efficient. You know, the funny thing is, though, you know, because of the fact that we're playing 3-game interleague schedules, this is what I was told. Right now, we're in the middle of 2 games here on a Tuesday and Wednesday, with Thursday and Friday no game, and then a Saturday and Sunday we have 2 games in Hiroshima. So, you know, it looked like they tried to clean up the interleague schedule, but yet we're still dealing with the 2-game schedule here with 2 days off and then 2 more. So, I don't know how often that's going to happen to us, but it looked like they were trying to accomplish that within interleague play, and now during Central League play we're getting a little bit of it. So, you know, I like it though. I like the idea for interleague play. I'd like to see the Central League, you know, format not have the 2 games with the 2 days off, but you know, they're trying to make adjustments and trying to make a step in the right way.
All right, now Central League teams have struggled. You guys haven't really ever won the interleague title.
Yeah.
So, what's your outlook for this year?
Hey, go out there and have fun. I mean, you know, it's always a nice opportunity to play against different guys, to face some different pitchers. We, you know, we see the same 5 teams throughout the vast majority of the season. To be able to go out there and see different ballparks and to see new faces, it's fun. They got a great league over there. Obviously, I think the pitching style might be a little bit different. There's a little bit more heat over there in general. But, you know, it's just a good time to go out there and be able to compete against some new faces.
All right, now, there was some time after the season last year, and I know it was a crushing defeat that you guys had in the Japan Series, but there was a time where we didn't know if you were going to come back this year. What was that like, and what happened?
You know, it was really tough pill to swallow the way the season finished last year. You work so hard. You work even extra hard here in Japan to get to that point. So, you know, there's a lot of time and effort put in to get to that moment, and you always want to try to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, we came out strong in game 1, and then unfortunately we had some tight games. I mean, the series ended up 4-1, but I think other than the first night when we won, and possibly the 3rd game, which was the first game in Fukuoka, they won pretty handedly. Every game seemingly came down to the last at bat. I think we had some opportunities in the 2nd game in Koshien with the tying run on 2nd base. Game four, it was, they hit the walk-off home run in extra innings to win the game. And then in game 5, it came down to that last play down there at first base, which was a very disappointing way to see the season finish. But it is what it is. It was a tough pill to swallow. Went into the offseason not so sure about my status with the club. The club, they have what's called the team option. And it was kind of up to them. It had nothing to do with me. The salary was in place, and you know, our family was committed to coming back here. Kind of came down to whether or not the team wanted us back. The economics of baseball, the business of the game, you know, my performance possibly coupled with the team's performance, and maybe a number of different factors is what caused them to make the decision to bring us back, and we're happy to be here. So, yeah, going into the offseason last year, had no idea whether they were going to execute that option or not, but they chose to, and here we are.
Well, it's really good to see you. Actually, really good to actually be able to see your face without the big bushy beard with the Miami Vice style. I really like that better.
Thank you.
My vote was to cut it last
year.
Thank
you. Stephanie felt the same way. My wife felt the same way. She looks back on the pictures now and says, "What in the world were you doing?" She goes, "Well, you did it once. You don't have to do it again." So I think I get the hint.
All right, buddy. All right. Well, we hope you get the hits too.
Thanks, man.
And that the guys do well. Good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
All right. Thanks again, Matthew. Really appreciate sitting down with you, buddy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was good. I would say I look forward to talking to you, but it seems like I'm always talking to you. So probably see you next week.
Good, good, good. So what was the biggest thing that you took away from that little chat?
Well, I guess it was the question about, you know.
You going to rip on one of my questions again?
I wasn't intending to.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to?
No.
Can't.
I can.
No, I can't actually, because there was nothing. It wasn't one of those those questions that that drive me nuts. No, it was basically talking about, you know, he's not hitting, and what I would comment on was that, and who he's working with. It was the next day after I listened to the interview. The next day, in the one of the sports papers ran a story about the Tigers are putting the pressure on Tom O'Malley to put the pressure on Matt Mertens to get his bat going.
I didn't see that story. The one I saw was the fact that the manager was kind of putting some pressure on him, saying, look, I'm considering dropping him in the lineup, which they did, to down to the sixth hole, but that they're also going to bring up the rookie Taiga Egoshi and that he might start. So, or Hayata Ito, who was going to start, who actually got in this weekend and played and hit a home run, had a three-hit game on Saturday. So,
well, Egoshi did play today. I don't think he did nothing, but yeah. So that was that anyway. So that was interesting, and I didn't expect much kind of a different answer from him in terms of, you know, what can you do when you're not doing well, except, you know, make it as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So he's certainly in a position now with the Tigers that the only thing that's gonna keep him from getting back to normal, to his norm, is basically somebody from the media or the team trying to set him off because they know he has a temper, and they know that if they bug him enough, they can get to him because we've seen that in the past, and he works very hard to control himself, and he's such a nice guy, but he can be agitated to the point of no return sometimes.
Yeah, we saw him blow up at an umpire and get ejected from a game. Yeah, at the Kyocera Dome, I think it was. Yeah.
Sure. So it happens, and everyone's aware of that, and I think that there are some reporters and some people in the organization who see it as their job to pick on the foreigners who aren't being Superman. So I think that's about the only thing that's going to keep it from happening. My guess is that ain't going to happen, and that he'll just sort of turn it around. He'll go on a hot streak, and it'll be just like, you know, it'll be like normal.
Yeah, he had three hits today and a double and an RBI. And I don't know, these things happen in baseball. I'm reminded by a hitter. I can't remember if it was a movie or if it was something that I actually saw, but some guy, I think it was a movie, like The Slugger's Wife or something like that, and the guy said, look, if I can get one of those bloopers to fall in, one of them, maybe two of them a week, that's enough to get my average up to a respectable number. And in Japan, I guess a respectable number means that the guys, people aren't bugging you unless you're not hitting home runs at all. And people don't say that you're in a slump when you have an 0 for game. I mean, I hate that expression that a guy has an 0 for night and they say he took a break. I hate that. It happens. Mm. The guy can hit the ball in the screws four times and have nothing to show for it.
Oh, well, we got that one from the Swallows manager tonight on Kazuhiro Takayama, who's raking pretty good. But this is, you know, his average is 228. He's hitting home runs, but his average is 228. Like, you know, okay, we'll send him back to the shop and fix him then, if you like. take away the home runs. What do you want, a guy with no power who hits 270?
Yeah, and strikes out a bunch.
Draws no walks.
Yeah.
Leave
think about
it alone.
What you're asking for. Yeah.
I know. It's amazing.
All right. Well, my biggest impression, or what I took away from this chat, was when I asked him about his contract situation.
All right.
Only mentioning that it was coming after the Japan series. And he basically broke down each game for us. And I thought that was big, because the question for me was about the contract, but here he is giving us all this information about the games, and it just told me how difficult and arduous a trek it is to get to the Japan series, and how much each game means to these guys, and each out and each pitch and all that stuff. And you talked to Tom O'Malley at the beginning of the season, and he spoke about it, and I think that's still fresh in their minds, and obviously, they're working on this season, and they're starting anew and trying to work their way back there. But you can just see how long a trek it was, and how much it sticks with him, for him to actually comment that way. That's what really stuck out for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was it was a weird series. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's never a surprise. I pointed out over and over again the Pacific League's winning percentage in games against the Central League's like 550 over a huge sample.
Mm.
And in the postseason, it's a little better than that, I believe. And I think a large part of that is having a squad where you need you can have a guy in your roster who doesn't have to play defense at all,
mm-hmm.
and who can just hit. And having that guy in three or four of those games when the other team doesn't,
right,
is huge.
Turns out to be an advantage. Yeah.
Sure. Right. Sure. You know, it makes it a little bit much harder to win. And on top of that, I think just the Pacific League is slightly better.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so moving along. Yeah. I didn't think, you know, I think he does well. I know some people are bitter about it. I know, Tom sounded really bitter about it. Everybody's sort of like, yeah. You know, we shouldn't have been, you know, we shouldn't have been beaten so bad, but they were beaten pretty good. I mean, yeah, there were a couple of close games, but they were beaten pretty good. And I mean, they were in the end, it was like the scores were close, but it's not like the Hawks were, it's like the scores were close because the Hawks were being the Hawks and creating zillions of scoring chances they weren't converting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Matt did take that little dig about the extra practice. And I didn't know whether he meant
that
overall season long the practice or the extra practice they had to do in the postseason.
No, once I think it means all the time.
I didn't know. I think it was both, to be honest. But I either way, I liked it. And it reminded me about the fact that these Giants players give us these sanitized answers, and that guys like Matt and Dennis Sarfate and Jason Standridge, they actually tell it like it is, and they give us the meat and potatoes and don't leave, you know, instead of just the beans and the coleslaw. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a great comment. You know, I love that. I kept thinking, you know, it's harder than hard. And I kept thinking, you know, it's like Japanese practice is like tougher than dirt. You know, it's dirtier than dirt.
Well, and I also like how he broke down the CL since it's, you know, his time that he's come here. And if you think about it, I mean, these teams, I mean, not like it was easy. It certainly wasn't easy for other teams in the top three to go out and win. But I remember our first year of the show, you said this Central League is pretty stratified and we've got three good teams and three not so good teams. And it's not that it's easy to beat them, but when it plays out, this is the way it's going to shake out more often than not. If you run simulations, you know, 1,000 times over, you know, these teams are just better. And I think now, although I'm just freaked out about the Carp, I don't know if it's them or if it's the rest of the league. But anyway, now I think it's not the case. I think you can run simulations and you're going to come out with different answers each time. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think, and he talked about how competitive it is on from pitch to pitch. And you know, I really wasn't looking for that answer in terms of what he looked at, but I wanted him to get to the point of the stress level. You know, does it make you stop and think and hesitate and all that stuff? And I guess what he's saying is, you know, he said you can't let it get to you.
No,
you know, you've just got to play the game. And
I think well, everybody knows there's the pitfall of of trying to do too much or trying to think too much about things that you can't deal with.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're, I was thinking about that with the Swallows because, you know, I talked to Tony Barnett today and I said, you know, it's like this team doesn't really, you know, nothing seems to bother them. You know, it's like the dominant story about the Swallows is not injuries. And he says, oh yeah, it is. One story is only about injury.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to, but what I meant was you guys are just, you know, just moving along. I mean, it's like, you've got enough of everything. They've got enough of everything to get the job done.
Yep.
Now, as soon as they start thinking, somebody's missing and we can't win without them, or we can't win unless we do this, you know, unless they can be better than they are, or they do more than they're capable of, or try to make plays they can't make, essentially, that's when it's like, you know, just waiting for, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, he said it's, you know, keep it as simple as possible. See the ball, hit the ball, you know, focus on today's game. And, you know, don't carry too – you carry too much, you're just going to sabotage yourself. So.
Right, and it sounds cliche, but I understand it. Yeah, I totally understand it because you got to play that way. You can't worry about
– can't win tomorrow's game.
Too much. Well, I really wasn't looking for tomorrow's game, but, I mean, it's really stressful. It wasn't like it wasn't stressful before, but I think it was – and before, I mean, 5 years ago in the Central League – When you were going to play some teams and you figured you were going to hit the ball well, you're going to make good contact, you're just hoping if it's going to fall in. Now, I mean, I think they're preparing a lot better. I think the pitching has improved, so you're just hoping you can put the ball in play and hoping it falls in. And then on defense, you have to plan out every scenario on every pitch in terms of that.
I guess one of the things that interested me, in speaking about, you know, going back in time a bit, I remember – the first year of interleague play, and Trey Hillman talking, you know, Trey Hillman, then the manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters, talking about how his guys were panicked because of this and that. And they weren't used to, you know, it's the opposite of what Matt said. Here they go from playing five teams to playing 11 teams, and they don't see the other teams except on TV. And they were panicking, they were freaking out.
Right.
And it was really weird. And for him, it was really weird. And I think for a lot of Americans, it's really weird. In any case, what Trey said was, we had a hard time dealing with it because in 2005, he said, basically the Pacific League was not the hard-throwing league. It was the Central League that was the hard-throwing league.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's sort of turned around.
Yeah, Matt mentioned that too. So, well, let's talk about the Tigers a little bit too. Now they're struggling to score, they're struggling to pitch, so it's no surprise they are where they are in the Central League, which is, last time I saw it, I think was fifth place, and they're 4 games under 500 as we speak on Sunday, and they're getting outscored. I remember last year, if you compare to last year, remember they were scoring a bunch of runs. At least their run differential was really high early on. And right now the team ERA is over 4, and that's equally spread, you know, between the starters and the relievers. They both have an ERA of over 4, and they're not hitting with runners in scoring position. And I remember you talked about it on the show, I think it was the first or second season of our show, that you said the time to start looking for a scapegoat means a scapegoat is necessary. So that's
as soon as you see somebody starting to look for a scapegoat, it means that one will soon be necessary.
Right. So and that's why I started to think about why they were pushing Matt. You know, even he's hitting 2-something. I actually think because of the 3 hits today, his average went up to 232, which was not what it was when I talked to him on Wednesday. Let's just put it that way. So he's had a good week in terms of that. But it's still so early. I mean, you can't really make judgments on anything, on anybody. And I who cares about the as long as you're not 10 games under 500, hint, Oryx Buffaloes, then I think you're fine as long as you have a good team. And I still think they have a good team. Of course, I didn't pick them to win, but that's not because I don't think they're not a good team. I just think that their other teams are better. You know, I looked around at their run scoring. They're minus 28. You know, after Sunday's games, that's kind of high.
No, they're not playing well, to be honest. I mean, they've done very well for their. I mean, their record is actually better than it should be.
Yeah. I see you put these numbers on.
Yeah, what
on Twitter?
If there's anybody reading them, there is what they call a Pythagorean winning percentage. I'm not going to go into the details, but it's a simple formula. It's basically the relationship between the runs you score and the runs you allow.
Mm-hmm.
And teams that, you know, so if you score and allow the same number of runs, basically it's going to say that you should be a 500 team.
Right.
And the more you score relative to the number you allow, the more likely it is that you'll have a better record.
Okay.
So basically that's it. It's basically a team with X number of runs scored and Y number of runs allowed will have Z expected win percentage Z, and that's what those are based on their runs scored and allowed. Those are the winning percentages they could expect.
And what do you have for the Tigers?
I don't know what I have for the Tigers yesterday. I didn't put them up today.
Okay,
we had on the Central League, we had a Hanshin with an expected winning percentage of 314.
Right, and they're 10-14, which is
not 314. No. And the Hiroshima Carp before, this is before Sundays, when before they got their bullpen got smacked for good reasons. Deserved to be smacked considering who they set out there.
Yeah, so you set that person out there.
So as of a Saturday, their expected winning percentage would have been 526. But there they are in last place.
Yeah. And so. The Tigers, after Sunday's games, their winning percentage is 417. So, I mean, they're doing poorly, yet doing okay. And I don't, only four games under 500, that's not bad. And like I said, next month, we're going to start with the interleague play. So it gives you a chance, actually, if you win a bunch of games, you don't actually make a lot of ground or pull away from anybody because they can win too. And the whole, and not that it happens that often, but the whole league could win one night, which is not the case because usually when you're playing league, three teams win and three teams lose. So, it's hard to make up ground.
Probably about 3.1 Pacific League teams win every night. We're looking for that 1/10 of a team. They're the troublemakers.
That must be the team I'm on. All right, let's talk about the Swallows. And Matt touched on it a little bit in the interview, and I counted it up today, and through 25 games, including Sunday's games, they have only allowed more than three runs, so four or more, four times.
Okay.
It's incredible.
How many of those were against the Bay Stars last week? It seems like all of them.
Just once. Once, I think, was the Tigers first, and then the Giants, and then the Bay Stars, and then the Giants again. But I know it's the Giants twice, the Bay Stars, and the Tigers. This is incredible. So my question to you, or my thought to throw out there, and this includes guys like Nagisa Arakaki, who didn't look too bad the other day.
No,
he's got that funny leg kick. I don't remember that funny leg kick with his left leg. Did you notice that?
I don't remember him at all.
Hashtag hi.
I remember he was with the Hawks, and I remember he was good, but I don't remember anything about it other than I was never a big fan for no real reason.
Anybody who's a real fan of all the teams, just watch his left leg when he lifts up his left leg and throws it in seven different directions before it actually ends up heading toward home plate.
He's got a wiggle. Oh my gosh! That's probably why he's effective. You know.
People are learning, like, what the hell is that? And then the ball goes zoop, goes in there.
Yeah, got the Louis Tion thing. He's got the Satchel Paige thing. You know, you never know where the ball's coming from.
Yeah, and then Yoshihisa Naruse, who I thought was going to be kind of a bust as a free agent, but he hasn't done poorly. And those guys. And the thing is, it's. We kind of knew what to expect from these two guys, that it was going to be mediocre maybe. The other guys we could have expected improvement from the other guys, right?
The younger kids.
The Tsuyudas and the Yagis and those guys. I would expect some improvement from those guys.
You had to expect some improvement for Arakaki. Either he was going to get better or he was going to be fired. But I didn't expect anything from him. I thought he was going to be just basically zero, as he had been for the last 2 years. Naruse, I didn't have high hopes for him, but I'll tell you, he strikes me as being a fairly sensitive guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the word in Chiba that for 2 years, basically, Ito got on his nerves.
He's so sensitive.
That he is. He's so sensitive. And
so he's like me. He's a prissy pitcher.
Could be.
I'm a prissy runner. He's a prissy pitcher. I love it.
Could be. I mean, he can be a bulldog, but I think it was almost like the last 2 years he's basically said, I prefer to be on the farm team because I don't like being around Ito.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a pot. You know, it's one of those things. You know, when you're thinking about what teams are capable of, you have to. You know, if you're really smart and you know everything, you would know, you know, all the little tensions and dramas that are going on. And you know, you know the difference between when the guy's actually good and not performing, and so he looks bad, and the guy's actually bad and not performing because he is bad.
Right.
So in this, you know, we just have to attribute to his results, which were poor. He had good games, but overall he was bad. So I didn't think he was going to be any good. But there's the possibility that he's better than he could have been under Ito.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the Swallows lost 4-1 to the Giants on Sunday night. But to be honest, I didn't expect these guys to do this. So the question I want to ask to you, do you think this is, and obviously I don't think it's sustainable, but how long do you think this is sustainable? Let's say up until the weather changes and it gets a little bit warmer, or is it going to be interleague that we see a difference in their pitching, or does it, will it take longer for the league to adjust? What's your opinion on it?
Well, no, I think the fundamental difference between the Swallows this year and last year is the defense. So is the league going to adjust? I don't think so. Unless they're going to, like, you know, be, you know, sabotage their gloves between innings, you know, cut holes in the webbing or something.
Yeah, I mean, you say, I'm sorry, you say defense too, but, and I'm not discounting it. We talked about it the last time that we brought it up.
I think that is the big difference. I think the better work in terms of more focus on defense. I think it's a team-wide thing. I think they kind of gave up on the defense last year in a sense.
I totally agree with you. I'm not fighting you on that at all.
I think that's the big difference. I think that and Ogawa being, you know, pitching. I mean, he missed half a season last year because, you know, he broke his hand.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the other guys being better, a little better, but I think the big difference is, you know, and here's the thing, when Naruse is the kind of pitcher who's going to pitch well when a team has good defense.
Obviously, yeah.
Because he gets a lot of balls in play, mm-hmm. and he works up high in the zone. You know, he moves the ball around a lot up in the zone. And he changes eye levels a lot, to use the current phraseology.
Mm-hmm.
So he will get a lot of fly balls, which is not necessarily a bad thing, especially if, you know, they're jam shots, and he jams a lot of people with that little slow, dinky little slow fastball of his. But yeah, I think if they're going to play defense, sure. I mean, and I think the big thing is that they have a plan this year, and the plan and they have people, you know, this is the person we're going to rely on for this, and the backup's going to be this, and so on and so
forth. Oh, so wait a minute, you're coming over to my side. You're saying that the roles are important now.
I always say the rules are important. I'm just saying that.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember we having like discussions about the roles, and I said, "Well, this guy knows his role." And
we have differences of opinion in how they can be important and how they can be measured, which I don't really have a clue. But I do, you know, I believe those things are important. I think having, well, I would say more than roles, but having a plan is crucial. And I always thought. And not because I didn't like Ogawa, but I think he was sort of like, you know, he had too small a bucket to bail all the water that was coming into that ship the last 2 years. And, you know, he didn't have enough hands.
Well, but true. They have had a couple injuries here and there. Millage, and then we saw Coco Ballantyne come back for just a brief stint of a few innings, and then he was out. And someone else was injured. Yoshinori Sato, we haven't seen him back. I know he pitched a couple games on the farm. I haven't looked for his numbers recently. Have you?
No, I have not.
So he's still not there. So that, I mean, that counts as an injury because I think.
Yeah, he's not here, sure. Muranaka, we haven't seen him this year, which is not a surprise because he just comes in. He's sort of like a ghost, you know, when he shows up. And that's what it is, because when he shows up, he scares the opponents. And then he disappears. He's gone, you know, and they're going, oh, hope we don't see that guy again. And oof.
Right. So as of Sunday night here, it's 1.74, the team ERA. I don't see that.
Now, that's not sustainable. Now, no. I don't think the ERA is sustainable, but I think as far as in terms of how good they are, yeah, some of that is fluky. You expect some regression back towards the mean,
right?
Especially playing at Jingu. So yeah, is it going to go up? But I don't see a reason why the Swallows couldn't lead the league in ERA this year.
Yeah, and you know, the thing I wanted to point out is yes, the defense has improved, and I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. But the pitches that Ishikawa was making on Saturday night.
Wow.
I mean, and everybody can have a good night, but he had a great night.
That's exactly. Yeah,
he had a great night.
He has a great night once or twice a year, for sure.
Once or twice a year, but I mean, and so I said I know that's why I'm asking the question. You obviously he can't come in and spot his little sinker and his little changeup and everything the way he did on Saturday night, but man, oh man, they're getting so many good performances on the mound. And they're combining that with a good defense. And I think that's
Well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to sound like a broken record again and again and again and again, and say, you know, I think Jason Koskry hit it on the head with his story about the pitching, other than, you know, than the sort of forgetting that guys were catching the ball. But you know, mentioning Katsunori Nomura and his work with the Swallows pitchers and catchers and being on one page. I mean, normally the battery coach might not even know who the pitchers are.
Hashtag hi.
But he was over there talking to the pitchers and the cat between the innings. I'm going, wow, that's a plan. You know, you got these guys, instead of the pitching coach talking, the normal communication is catchers talk to the battery coaches and catchers talk to the pitchers. The pitchers talk to the pitching coach and the pitchers talk to the catchers. But the battery coach, you know, there's that sort of like, you know,
the one direction.
It's not a party line. It's not like open communication. It's like old style. You only got, you know, talk, you know, walkie talkie. Okay. On, off, you know, right. You can only talk to so many people. So I think that's the thing. I think that's a huge thing with the Swallows, that, and that the plan from day one in camp was, if we don't catch the ball better, we're going to finish last again.
Well, speaking of last, we'll go to the Pacific League and talk about the Oryx Buffaloes. Now, they did have a 5-game winning streak recently. Of course, that got frozen out in Sapporo. And they ended up losing 2 of 3 over the weekend up there. But I did see some improvement. I saw Yoshio Itoi, the guy I, you know, was so in love with, or have been so in love with for so long.
Are you still stalking him?
Am I still what? Stalking?
Stalking.
I don't have time to stalk anybody. Unless,
oh, okay. Just making sure.
I just watch him swing and I drool in front of the TV. But that's not stalking. That's a different kind of problem.
Okay.
that's what that was.
Spot I saw on the rug.
Anyway, they won 5 in a row. I watched some of the games. I still don't know how they won some of these games. And they've just made adjustments with the guys they have, is what I thought. Of course, Itoi started to hit better. It made a difference. Francisco Caraballo, he's been a godsend. Because they lost Hiroyuki Nakajima. He was deactivated when he got injured. And Caraballo has been productive. And they just needed somebody to do what he's done. And I saw him in the game in Chiba shorten his swing and just try to get a runner home from third base with less than 2 outs. And I thought, okay, I haven't been seeing this. Even though it's just one run, and during this stretch they've been losing leads, so it, you know, it's no guarantee with the one run that that's going to do them any good in some respects. But you know, he tried to do that, and you could see that he was working to do that, and they ended up winning that game. And it's good, but I, you know, I just really, like I said last week, it's still early. But when you dig yourself into a hole like that, you've got to play. You can't. And this guy Takahiro Matsuba, I keep tweeting that he's the left-handed version of Hideaki Wakui. He's worse. I mean, he's worse in that he doesn't show any motion out there. He's like a robot. And he pitched today, and it was just...
Did you say me and Darvish a lot?
No, not yet.
Okay,
I would
good.
Hope not. You and Darvish what?
Smack him if he did.
Yeah, going to say you and Darvish what? Just because you pitched on the same mound? Ha! Huh, they ought to wash that dirt. After you get off of the mound.
Wow.
Hashtag hi.
That's mean. And I didn't even say it. Wow. So I'll tell you, because I was out also, I was at Chiba on Tuesday, and it was really cool because, you know, they were, I talked to some people who follow them, and I talked to a couple of the coaches, and yeah, they said a big thing was Itoi swinging the bat like people expect him to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a spark. Now, Caraballo has been hitting since day one.
Right.
But the other pieces were not coming together. And I think when Itoi started swinging the bat, people went, oh, I don't have to do it all by myself again. Caraballo said he wasn't worried about that at all. But the thing that interested me, of course, the thing with the Oryx is that their entire back of their bullpen was wiped out.
Right. From the, you know, closer lost, to the seventh
inning guy. They lost the long, the middle, the seventh inning guy, the eighth inning guy, and the ninth inning guy.
Yeah. We didn't talk about that last week. Hidano, Yoshihisa. Right. Hidano had been injured, the closer.
And so anyway, what are you going to do? And I talked to a couple of different people, and Alex Maestri and Brad, of course, Alex Maestri is really good.
Mm-hmm.
He was good last year. The basic issue for him is that Oryx has six foreigners they can use,
mm-hmm.
which meant that until Esteban Germán and Tony Blanco went down, Maestri couldn't play and Caraballo couldn't play.
Right.
So these two guys are pretty good. And so that, and you know, having Maestri on the farm team was beautiful, because he came up and he's really anchored that a fairly, well, I guess Mahara is older than Dirt, so we can't say he's inexperienced, but yeah, thank you. So, but the other guys are young, and I asked Brad Dixon, and I said, I asked the pitching coach, Ikuo Takayama, and he said, yeah, I think some of the starters are thinking that because the bullpen's beaten up, we mm-hmm. might have, you know, I have to go an inning longer. You know, I have to push it. I have to save, you know, I have to be, stretch myself a little thinner, go a little longer. And I asked Brandon Dixon, and he said, you know, I never thought about it. And he said, it's tough on those guys. He said, yeah, so I don't have any problems. He trusts them all. He said, but they probably have confidence issues until they get used to it. And it was like when he said that, the bullpen was just coming in, and you know, these guys who I frankly don't know most of their names,
right?
Or guys who I've tried to forget their names, like Kaida and Skuhara. Kaida's been okay, and Mahara's probably been the worst of the bunch, but he got a save in there, and Alex has probably been the best,
right?
And they've been getting the job done.
They pieced it together, yeah.
Yeah, they pieced it. You know, these guys are like going. And here's the thing, you know, these guys come in and they're on the line and getting it done, and they're getting, you know, they're getting the confidence they need to make the small adjustments they need, and they're not, people aren't shouting out because it's Oryx, you know, nobody's blaming them
right.
when they give them a run. So I think what Oryx is doing is really what a lot of teams go through. I think the Swallows went through it last year. You know, the guys who are stuck there doing the job get better,
yeah.
can get better. It's an opportunity for them to get better. And now they've got all these guys who weren't expected to be the leaders who are becoming, you know, stepping up. And another guy I have to give credit to, and I know I dissed on him in the spring when he got a hit off of Hiroki Kuroda, a guy who's one of the real team leaders of Oryx, which is hard when you're a bench player, but Tomotaka Sakaguchi,
right.
is the – if you ever have a chance to see Oryx come up, you know, to play on the road, and you get to see them warming up before BP, you'll see Sakaguchi is like, I don't know how to explain it. He's a spark plug in the workouts. He's
yep.
shouting at people and joking at people, and he's just a bundle of energy on a team that, and he was hitting a tear when the team was coming out of this.
Yeah, he was hitting too.
They got some interesting dynamics going on there. So I think Oryx is going to be okay.
I think they're going to come back. All right, a couple notes. One, Randy Messenger, on the day that I went out to Yokohama Stadium, he was a starting pitcher for the Hanshin Tigers, and he became the foreign pitcher with the most 10 strikeout games
in the Central League. Pitchers. I thought it was like...
Yeah, in the Central League, and it was his 12th. So he's got a perfect dozen in double-digit strikeout games.
Wow.
And then Kenny Ray of the Rakuten Eagles became the first pitcher in NPB history in his 40s to win his first four starts to open a season. So,
which poses a question.
No, it doesn't.
It does. Which is, if any of you look at the NPB website and you know where they post all the awards, you'll notice that about the middle of the month, they start posting the candidates to win the Player and Pitcher of the Month award, which is John and I's our favorite award.
Don't put me in.
And it's like, what do they have an ID check or an age limit? I mean, Ray is like more qualified than half the guys on the PL Pitcher of the Month. I mean, he's not going to win it because Ohtani's got it locked up with 5 wins,
right?
And Ohtani deserves to win it. But Kenny Ray's got 4 wins. He's got an ERA below 2. You know, he's got one of those track records in March and April that would win you the pitcher of the month, you know, five times a year. And he wasn't even on the candidates list.
Yeah.
So it's like, the question is, who makes this stuff up? Nobody. It's almost like the people at NPB don't know and they don't want to know.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like the envelope arrives on our desk and we just put it on the website. We don't ask questions. And somebody better be asking questions. These things are ridiculous.
I don't know, I was going to make up a name for him because he's getting better with age, like wine. So I don't know very much about wine. So the only thing I could come up with is Chardonnay instead of a Chardonnay.
Okay.
But they wear
burgundy uniforms.
I don't know. He's amazing. So congratulations to him. Let's go to fielding questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the first one is the high heat question. It comes to us via Twitter from @CostaFreak. And he says, who are some developmental or Ikusei players who have the best chance of making impact in 2015? And so, you know that I don't look at these guys coming out of college or the high school stuff. I don't look at that very much. So, of course, I went to one of my scout friends and I said, hey, give me a couple names. And then the other name I got on my own. So the first name he gave me was Eiji Sawamura, and I knew he was kidding. smack at you for that one. But he said,
yeah.
So he said Hector Mendoza of the Giants.
And yeah, the 20-year-old Cuban kid.
And he said he might get some first-team play this year.
Yeah.
And then the other guy I thought about was Takehiro Donoue, Giants. He went to the Giants from the Dragons in the offseason, and he has top team experience. So if he can get to the top team and get on the field, I think he'll have an impact. Because he's an outfielder and he might be able to play some first base, but it's a long shot. I mean, the other thing is that the most important thing to know is, and I heard a TV interview with a Giants front office exec, I think it was about 4 years ago that I heard the TV interview, and this is right at the height of Tetsuya Yamaguchi, the Giants all-star reliever, at his height, and the guy flat out said, well, you know, the reason we sign these guys to Ikusei contracts or developmental contracts is because we don't think they're going to become this good.
Mm-hmm.
There is no expectation for them.
Right.
We don't know that this guy is going to be the best setup man in Japan and set some holds records and all that stuff.
Right.
So we just try to do our best with player development, and we bring guys on who have some potential, and we see what they can do. So that's the thing to keep in mind.
Of course, the Giants had two back-to-back Rookie of the Years who were developmental players.
Right. Yamamoto was the other one, right? Matsumoto.
He wasn't a developmental player for very long. You know, they gave him a first-team contract in camp or in the preseason because they had a bunch of guys hurt and they had to use him in the inter-squad games, and he was the best player.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a gutsy type, scrappy type, and he made a case for himself, and he was in the right place at the right time. Yamaguchi was just real good.
Yep.
And
no
got
doubt
better.
About it. Yeah, no doubt
and,
about it.
And there's been a couple of, Yoshifumi Okada was an Ikusei player.
Mm-hmm. That's Lotte Marines. Yep.
Yep. The guys I think who have the best chance, I'll just stick with hitters because hitters tend to be more predictable.
Okay.
The three guys, developmental players who already have a track record. I'm not talking about your Takahiro Donoue. I can play at the top level. They are, drum roll please, Kentaro Inomoto, who's probably the best minor league hitter right now in Japan. And he was drafted by the Hawks in the 2008 developmental draft. I think he's about 25 or 26 now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a heck of a hitter. He's basically a first baseman.
Okay.
He's a catcher. He's a catcher who they won't let catch. The next guy has just started to play with the Hawks first team, Taisei Makihara. He was a 2010 developmental draft guy. This guy is probably, he may be the fastest player in NPB right now.
Okay.
He's just – I saw him beat out, you know, at, when I was at Chiba Marine, the stadium formerly known as Chiba Marine on Sunday. He beat out a routine grounder to short.
Right, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the other guy is Go Kamamoto, and these guys all play for SoftBank. Go Kamamoto, I'm going to put him at last. He's a good hitter, and he's 21 years old this year, but he doesn't have a position. His position is DH.
Okay.
So that keeps him from making an impact, probably.
All right. The next question is from Matt in Missouri, and this was via the Facebook page, and he says, "Hi guys, love the show. Thank you very much, Matt. Mm-hmm. What are your opinions on the Giants signing of Juan Francisco? Is it a marginal upgrade or something more?
Or something less?"
Jim?
I don't know. I don't know much about Juan Francisco. I mean, I looked at his numbers a bit. I barely remember him playing in the States. He doesn't have a lot of – he doesn't have really B-plus power. He doesn't walk very much, and he strikes out a lot. Well, what does that leave? A guy who's going to have a heck of a time adjusting to Japan, unless it's just a case of he has, you know, like A-minus bat speed,
mm-hmm.
and he's a fastball. You know, he can hit breaking pitches, but the best fastballs are too fast for him.
Mm.
Unless that's the case, I would say no. Probably Leslie Anderson's. You know, he'll just be a fill-in for Leslie Anderson when he's hurt.
Well, I thought he was a third baseman.
Oh, is he? Okay.
I thought he was an infielder. So the thing that struck me is obviously, you know, Shuichi Murata got dropped to eighth, and he's supposed to be a power hitter, and he's a former home run king. You drop him to eighth, you're telling him basically, you got no place here, son.
Yeah, well, I mean...
The dog has kicked you out of the doghouse. You got no place.
Hirokazu Ibata started at third base today.
Yeah.
Murata came off the bench as a pinch hitter. Murata's got he's got issues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at Francisco, and you said it. He strikes out a lot. He doesn't walk very much.
I don't see him adding a lot to that team.
But here's the thing. Yeah, he reminds me of the guys like Rob Deer. Remember him and Glenn Allen Hill? They were power pigs. Steve Bye-Bye Balboni. You know, they either make contact and hit the ball really far, or they swing through and create a lot of breeze in the dome. Either way, if he hits it, which Murata is not doing, he's not hitting for power, and that's what they want. So if he hits a couple home runs here and there and strikes out a bunch of times, I don't think they care as long as they get some home runs. Because they're going to be guys on base.
Well, the problem in Japan is that basically, let's just for argument's sake, let's say the strike zone for foreigners is a little bigger,
mm-hmm.
which is arguable, but let's say it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have guys who have borderline in knowing what the strike zone is to begin with.
Right.
Now, maybe it's a case of – Now, let's put it this way. He has trouble with striking out a lot. And now how much worse is that going to get when they don't have to throw a ball in the strike zone? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be Craig Brazel who probably the best way to get him to look at a pitch is to throw it, you know, down Broadway. But, you know, we don't know. I don't know why he strikes out so much.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Is it an upgrade? I would say probably at the moment, no. But I think, like yes. I said, they
at
want
the best,
some power.
It's like, right, yeah.
Yeah, they want some power, and if they get some power, you know, that changes the lineup and people – not that they're going to avoid pitching to him because they'll probably pitch around guys to get to him because they think they can strike him out. But if he makes contact, you know, we know it's going to go out of the park. So
I'm doubtful, but, you know, we'll see. I'm wrong more often than I'm right, so yeah.
Okay. And the last question is from Glenn in Tokyo, and this came via the Facebook page. And he said, the retro uniforms I saw the Oryx Buffalo sporting last weekend, and that would have been the weekend of the 19th and the 18th and 19th. And he said, that made me wonder what everyone's favorite or least favorite uniforms have been over the years. He said he loved the old Lions blues and the yellow-orange stripes on the old fighters' uniforms as well. Yeah, I could go on and on about this. So I'll just let you go first, and I'll just wrap it up here.
My favorites are the pinstripes, the three, the fighters, navy and orange from the 10, 15 years ago. The Swallows pinstripes, navy and red. And I guess the Hanshin Tigers, as far as ugliest, that's a big pond, you know. it's tough to sink to be the bottom of that one. But, you know, sorry, Bobby, but I have to go with the black Chiba Marines uniforms that they wore once. They had black uniform pants. They could choose the tops and the pants, and they had one uniform, and they had to wear them once because Bobby wanted everyone to try them out, and they lost, and I think they might have burned them.
I'm going to say that was
2004, but it might have been 2005 or 2006. It had to have been 2004 or 2005.
Okay.
Serafini, I think, wore them and then swore he'd quit the team before he ever wore them again.
Well, I do like the Marine. I think my most favorite over the years has been those Marines uniforms that were the jerseys started out black at the top, but they've kind of faded or bled to a light color as you move down the jersey. And I wanted one of those.
Those were cool.
Those were really nice. That's probably been my favorite. That's probably been the only one. The ones I like the least, there's a whole school of them out there.
You only pick one.
I hate the Lions blues. Those are the ones I hate the most. I take that back. Those are the regular.
You mean those old Cebu Lions, powder blue, Kansas City.
That's
Rose
not powder blue. That's like sea blue. That's a darker blue than that San Diego Chargers powder blue. But no, I never liked those. Those are the regular uniforms that I hated the most. And those fighters uniforms that Glenn is describing, that makes my skin crawl. I don't like those either, but I think the worst...
I like them a lot better now that I know they make your skin crawl.
You're just mean. And the ones I don't like, or I like the least in the recent years, were those jean-style uniforms that the Hiroshima Carp wore about 3 years ago.
Denim uniforms.
Denim-looking things. Oh, my gosh. That was horrible. That was horrible.
I saw a new one. I apologize for interrupting you for the. I'm keeping track. That was the 212th time tonight.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, thank you. I saw one I liked was the Eagles who perpetrated all these ugly Tohoku green, but they had their colors, but with Tohoku in script written on them, which was a new look.
Mm-hmm.
Last weekend, I thought those were pretty sharp.
Those are nice. All right, some more recent ugly ones that I don't like. The all black uniforms that the Tigers played in one summer.
Yeah, the retro uniforms.
Yeah, those, and they were all black, and they were hotter than the Dickens. Let's just put it like that. The Lions had some jerseys about 3 years ago that looked like they were baby. Now that was a powder blue base, and then down the middle of them was a streak of green. It looked like they had been in a Martian eating contest, and they'd spilled Martian guts all over.
They had uniforms matching the new paint scheme on the Cebu Line trains, looked good on trains, to be honest.
Any of these green uniforms, the SoftBank Hawks had some, you know, they had green, yellow, purple, red jerseys, all that stuff. Throw them out. Burn them. I don't like those. The Buffaloes have some gold uniforms. The Fighters have gold uniforms. I want those burned. I'm very fashion conscious. So when I see a game, the first thing I do is I kind of look at, I get in touch with my feminine side, and I start to look and see what's going on. What's, you know, just the fashion part and how the color schemes are going. And
you need a fashion corner.
I need a fashion. Like, I do, like, because I really need to help some of these people out.
And this is not a race thing. You could be the Mr. Blackwell. You can be the Mr. Blackwell of NPB.
What I can do is get rid of all these bad ideas. Nope, burn them. Next. I can be NPB fashion police guy. I can do that.
You can be a fashion Nazi.
I don't know about Nazi, but I'll take the police card. All right, guys. Okay. Well, everybody else, send us your favorite or least favorite uniform ideas. Tweet them to @JBW Podcast, and you can send a high heat question to us there as well. Or you can send us email at ykyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Strike!
1 World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch 1 World Sports.